This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Autumn begins as a season for movement and ends with everything changed. From the boggy pools of the Scandinavian tiger forests, west to the far coast of Greenland, and east to the Arctic coast of Siberia, geese are breeding. Throughout the far north, birds have been raising young all summer long, making the most of the season of light and food. From the cliffs of Svalbard, where they have been breeding out of the poor reach of polar bears, barnacle geese goslings have jumped before they are capable of flying, landing in the soft embrace of Arctic tundra. The fortunate will make it. In the volcanic central plateau of Iceland, pink-footed geese have survived a season of being strafed by eagles and battered by the capricious Icelandic climate. The geese of the north are converting food into yellow fat stored just beneath their skin, ready to fuel the long flight in a scheme pointing south. 5 wild species will head to Britain for the winter, a relative land of plenty and gentler weather, respite from a north that is still ice-blasted and snow-bound for the winter. Mid-September in southern England, a long hot summer is slowly burning up. The grass is parched. We drive north into our new life, and I am not interested in geese yet.
The voice there of Stephen Rutt, author, reading from his latest book, Wintering. Now, Mark Stephen, he's Ewan McElraith. Stephen's with us at the moment. Tell me where we are.
We're at the Wildfowl and Wentstross Reserve at Calaverock in Dumfries.
It's a seriously atmospheric morning.
It's a wonderful morning, apart from the fact it's really early. It's about 6:30. Pretty clear sky, beautiful full moon, really crisp frost. And every now and again, you can hear just the hint of the dawn chorus. And way in the background, you can get a sense and a hear of what we're actually here for.
We wanted to talk to you about your latest book, Wintering, which is based in this area, in the Solway area. But we thought at the same time we want to see one of the great wildlife spectacles in Scotland, which is just some of these geese taking off first thing in the morning.
Yep, it's just about to happen. Down here we've got about 40,000 barnacle geese. We're going to walk down to the Merse here and see what it holds.
Well, we can't actually see the Merse. There's light in the sky, but that's about it. We can hear the ice. Yeah. How did you get into birds in the first place?
So, my dad is a birder, so I always grew up with an idea that going out bird watching was a sort of normal activity. But I was actually a fisherman when I was 12 and 13, and my brother was a fisherman too, and he used to sort of completely outcatch me every time we went, which is quite annoying. Yeah. And eventually I just got bored of sitting still. So one spring morning, at the age of 14, I was just like, Dad, take me for a walk. So I think he spotted an opportunity. He took me to Minsmere, the RSPB reserve on the Suffolk coast, which is near where I'm from. And I was sort of hooked. I had the most amazing walk. All the nature you could want to see at Minsmere showed itself. And just as it was getting dark, a Chetty's warbler jumped into a scrubby little sapling, a sort of nothing tree. And it was the first my dad had ever seen in a lifetime of birding. My dad's a bit like me. He's not a man given to being excited by things. But he dissolved in excitement. That enthusiasm was infectious. And that was it. That's me hooked.
But what about being 14 years old and being a birder? Is that an easy time to be obsessed with birds, or is that a difficult time? Because birdwatching is not really a cool thing, is it?
Oh, God, no. I was never a cool teenager either. So that did kind of make it easier. When you're 14 and you're birding, you're probably doing it on your own. I had to keep my interest to myself, pretty much.
Save yourself a beating.
But at the same time, when you're that age, you can be obsessed without shame about things, which is a good part of the learning process, was just to sort of wrap myself up in bird books, bird magazines, birding forums. I grew up slightly before social media, so I didn't get Twitter and stuff until I was about 17. So I had to do a lot of learning sort of in private, or sort of repeatedly asking my dad what a Dunlin was, for example.
You ended up living and working in London. And you write the preface in Seafarers about being in the underground.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because that really resonated with me.
So I went to university at Stirling, so I went from Suffolk to Stirling, and then I got a job in London, and it's probably the worst thing I've ever done in my life. I hated my life in London. I hated the crowds. The fact that the street becomes your horizon. All of these things that I wasn't used to, the constant sound, the cost of it all. I sort of started having sort of small panic attacks on the tube. There were days when I couldn't leave the house. Some truly awful experiences happening to me. Which is why I got on that plane to Orkney.
How difficult a decision was that? Because I'm kind of with you. I mean, Mark and I both get nervous around streetlights. This is heaven for me. Yeah. But having worked in London, having worked in Bristol, I absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
But it's a big decision to actually grasp the ball and say, oh, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, so it helps that when I was 22, I was single, I was coming to the end of my tenancy. I had this weird sort of freedom. Nothing was actually going to hold me down. And I used to look at the people around me and go, I don't want to become you. So leaving was actually quite an easy option. I was just fortunate that North Ferronsey Bird Observatory were the only bird observatory to answer my email. They offered me 2 months of volunteering and ended up staying for 7.
Couldn't get rid of you.
That's a big jump, though, to North Ronaldsea. Have you heard of North Ronaldsea before?
I'd heard of it from a birding perspective, but I remember being in the pub on my leaving drinks and being asked sort of, you know, questions about the island, like how big is it? I said population, I don't know, maybe about 1,000 or something. Turns out it was about 50.
Yeah.
It's 4 miles long, 1 mile wide. And it's heaven. The wind is gale force and has travelled over nothing but sea since Greenland to greet me here. Early March is not an auspicious time to arrive in the Northern Isles of Scotland. Standing on the airport tarmac at Kirkwall in Orkney, I feel the coldness of it skimming in along the island coast. I feel the insistence of it, the way it isn't stopping at my new coat, but cuts through nylon, fleece, jeans, skin, bone. My flight is to be on the smallest plane I've ever seen. One propeller on each toy wing. 2 seats wide, 4 seats long. It is half full, which I'd later learn was busy for the time. Evidently rush hour is different up here. Flying is too. I give my name without being asked. Offer to show my printed ticket, some ID, none of it needed. We walk over the runway, duck under the wing and clamber in.
So what was that like when you got to North Ronaldsea? And you're in a community of birders.
Yep. Felt like coming home in a way. was around people, you know, where my interests were accepted. And the island is basically a paradise for birding.
Explain why. Why is it a paradise for birding?
It's a small crofting island, so all the fields are full of waders, the lapwings and stuff like that. And there's marshy bits where there's snipe. The most visible bird is the fulmar, which is possibly my favourite bird. I think there's about 400 of them on the island. Uh-huh. And when I arrived in March, in the middle of that gale, they were just drifting along the walls and flying without a single concern. You know, they'd come and fly pretty much at your head and then just pass by and just look at you as they would do it. Uh-huh. And they've got these most amazing sort of inscrutable black eyes. Uh-huh. And, yeah, I fell for them there. March on the island was amazing. It was... The weather was fairly brutal, as you'd expect. But I saw northern lights, meteor showers. There's that elementalness that you get from being somewhere like that. It was like I'd been, you know, plugged back into the world. It was great.
It's not really geese now, though. Or are they swans?
They sound like geese to me.
Yeah. Getting quite a lot of geese now. That sky's really lighting up now. Yeah. Beautiful colours. Oops, that's just going. There's some in the air.
There's some in the air.
Yeah.
These are barnacle geese. They're sleeping on the Solway, roosting out of the range of foxes and stuff, and this is just them drifting into the marshes. Okay. That is a very small flock. There's going to be a lot more out there.
So they're coming in, are they?
Yeah, so they'll be feeding on the marshes, feeding on the merse behind us, having come off the river.
Okay.
It's frozen this morning, so I don't know how that's going to affect them, so that's going to be
just
interesting.
Lovely sight of them, because the sun is just coming up, uh-huh. And they're just flying along a real slit of red and orange.
Yeah. Yes. It's a lovely sort of apricot dawn, a little bit of blue in there, a little bit of red.
Okay. You win with apricot.
We've got the Radio Master Van Horn over there, just sort of shimmering slightly as well.
What are those lights across there?
So that is Silliff. And that's the Lake District Fells you can just see there.
Okay.
Scarfell is the big one.
Yeah. It is beautiful at this time of the morning. How many species of geese have we got? I mean, where do they all come from?
So we have about 6 wild species in the country. Mm-hmm. The ones we're looking at, the barnacle geese, they come all the way from Svalbard. Mm-hmm. So the entire population of geese that breed on Svalbard spend the winter on the Solway. And there's also some pink-footed geese about, and they've come all the way from sort of the central plateau of Iceland and a couple over in Greenland as well.
How about the calls? Because Mark and I do this every year and forget it every year. Which is one that goes pink, pink and oink, oink? And what are the different calls of the geese?
So pink-footed geese, they go sort of wink, wink, wink. And the barnacle geese, they're more like a sort of yapping dog noise.
I think you said in your book, more beagle than bugle.
More beagle than bugle, yeah. When they're en masse, these distinctions, they can blur a little bit because they're all shouting over the top of each other.
Why are they shouting? Is it just to keep in contact?
Yeah, I think so. As far as I know, it's just that.
But you think they can see each other. You know, they're forming Vs. You know, they're using each other to sort of facilitate flight. So why do they have to shout at the same time?
These are one of the philosophical questions of our time, indeed.
It's a fabulous philosophical question. I'm going to go away and Google that and get back to you.
What about the barnacle goose? Because why is it called the barnacle goose?
So it's called the barnacle goose because in the sort of 12th century, people didn't understand bird migration, which is a reasonable thing, I suppose. If these birds are coming in from places you've never heard of and will never hear of, how do you understand that? So it's particularly, I think, prevalent in Ireland. They used to come across barnacles in the summer and geese in the winter, and they used to assume that the geese hatched out of the barnacles. Mm-hmm. I mean, the logic is okay.
The barnacle is kind of goose-shaped.
When the neck is extended, yes. It does kind of look a bit like a goose neck and head.
Yeah, and the actual sort of the barnacly bit of the barnacle is the same shape as a beak.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see it from that perspective. The great thing about this was that this meant they were fish and not birds, and thus on sort of Christian feast days they could be eaten on Fridays and in Lent. And it took a pope, I can't remember which pope, and a papal decree to say that, no, don't be stupid, these are birds, not fish. Stop eating them.
Yeah, stop that.
fascination with the geese.
So there was a time when I didn't care about geese at all. So growing up in East Anglia, there's plenty of geese, but there's also plenty of waders and warblers and other sort of exciting birds. And geese were always just there, so I sort of always just ignored them. And it wasn't until we moved to Dumfries that I was stood in the council car park, and I heard the sound of pink-footed geese, and I complete sort of bizarre semi-out-of-body experience of what on earth am I listening to. I know the sound, but I can't place it because I'm surrounded by parked cars, buildings in every direction. It's bizarre. And then it's this skein of about 120 pink-footed geese, and I was like, wow, that's incredible. I didn't expect that. It was a week before we gave ourselves the freedom to have fun. The decorating done, the shed door reattached, bookcases reassembled, and our books out of their boxes and into some sort of order. We go for a walk, following a path looping up around the far edge of the town, in the rich, warming light of the midday sun. It illuminates the remaining chaos of the storm. Great boughs of plane trees are broken, pushed and pulled from their trunks by the eddying wind, and lie split next to the path. Others are wedged in the river, like the work of the beavers that would once have been here. Some block the path entirely, and we scramble over them. It feels good to be outside after the distresses of moving house. It feels good to be here now, so we can begin with the beginning of autumn. The decision to come feels worth it. In the sunshine, a buzzard leaps out of a tree on the other side of the river. It cries twice, spirals overhead, then lifts up, soaring high on open wings, as if carrying our stresses with it. I feel eager for the autumn. Birds punctuate my year. Time passes constantly, but birds are the grammar of its passing. They give a rough working order to the months. I have my totems, the first singing chiff-chaff at the beginning of spring, and the first screeching swift at its end. The silencing of song at the end of summer, the disappearance of the swifts and the arrivals of autumn. The extra thrushes, the red wings gently whistling through the autumn night, and the field fares clattering along fruit-laden hedgerows. And now I have a new totem. By the time we get home from our walk, the light is thick and golden, descending over the western hills. We make ourselves tea and watch the sky turn, anticipating the colour of the leaves to come. And that's when we see the first skein, a simple arrow of birds as distant as the hills, heading south through the sunset. It is the 23rd of September, our winter of geese about to begin. That October, we just had geese passing over our flat, sometimes 50, sometimes a couple of thousand, every morning and every evening. And yeah, I was just completely hooked on them there.
So where are the geese now?
So they are just out there. You can't see them because the tide is quite low, but they'll be out there on the mud. And as the light comes up, you should see sort of big black strings of them out there on the mud. Mm. I can still hear them. They sound like
you can hear them muttering. Yeah.
Yes, sounds like they're coming over to the west, which is in the direction of Southerness.
We're standing on a track, and outside of us there's gorse, which is just rimed with frost. It's quite a hard frost this morning. You get the Merse in front of us. Again, that's just a low-lying. It looks like really patchy lawn, but I bet you that's wet.
It's probably frozen at the moment as well. But I was looking behind me, and you've got this real low, almost kind of thermocline inversion of temperature of that low-lying cloud.
Yeah,
it's quite... It's a real mix of landscape, isn't it?
Yes. That's what I love about Dumfries and the area around here. Whichever way you go out of the town, the landscape's completely different. If you go to Westing to Galloway, it's sort of like the Highlands. If you go north, it's like the Dales. Come down here, it's just like sort of Essex, where I used to live. Okay. Only Essex didn't have Criffel, which is the 500-metre hill you're looking at over there.
And just kicking up through the mist.
Yes, that's Wardlaw up there, that little crown of trees.
Okay.
It's about 100 metres high, and that's the best view over the Solway, I think.
Okay. How does it work in terms of being a writer? Because, I mean, you obviously love being outdoors.
Yeah.
But in order to share that love, you've got to sit on your backside in front of a computer screen.
Yeah, there's an irony involved in that, isn't there? You have to be kind to yourself when you're writing. You have to take yourself out for walks. And what I love about the flat I live in at the moment, our windows face west. I can see the geese from my desk while working sometimes. Yeah. And you can see them swirling around that sort of terrace roof height above the aerials.
That can't be conducive to productivity, I would have thought.
Sometimes not, no. But sometimes, you know, you take yourself out, you have to sort of pay for it in words. So you have to sort of, you can be a hostage to yourself.
Yeah. Well, there's more light in the sky now. Still a lot of colour.
Gorgeous morning.
Yeah. The sort of molten metal cloud, that's nice.
Yeah. There's still a huge old string of geese out there.
So why do they come here?
So the Solway is a great place for safety. It's basically a ginormous estuary out here. So there's plenty of places to sleep at night, and also we're surrounded by lots of good salt marsh and grazing land and cattle fields, which is full of food for them. So you know, what a goose wants in life is a safe place to sleep and some good food. I guess a bit like the rest of us. The Solway's got that in plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they must get through a fair old pile of grass because they don't have a rumen like a cow or a sheep.
They're very inefficient. Most of what goes in comes straight back out.
Given the size of the flocks of geese and the fact that their digestive systems are so hopeless and the amount that they actually poo at the far end, it must actually make a difference to the land where they visit. You know, because they're putting in green manure all the time.
Yeah, they're fertilising. I don't know of any studies on the wintering grounds, but I know on the where they breed up in Svalbard, it plays an important role in returning nitrogen to the soil and fertilising the Arctic tundra. And also reindeer eat barely digested goose droppings as well, which is exciting. Also, Brent geese, they have a strategy where they sort of farm the grass. So they will graze in one field and then they'll leave it alone. And then 5 days later, when...
Literally 5 days?
I think it's about that, yeah. When the grass is regenerating, it concentrates most of the nutrients in the top bit of the grass. So 5 days later...
The reason I asked specifically, 4 or 5 years ago, one of the agricultural colleges in Scotland was looking at that type of rotational grazing for farmers.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's taken us all this time to actually figure out what the geese have been doing instinctively anyway.
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, they just take the little tops of the grass, which is packed with nutrients, so they need the best food because of their digestion so inefficient. So they have ways around this, which is great.
What do you feel about winter? Is that a good time for birding?
Yeah, it can be. Winter varies, I think. Some winters, it's absolutely awful. If you get a cold blast early on, that just clears everything south, and you're then sort of left wandering in empty countryside going, there used to be birds here. But at the moment, things have just come in. We've not had too much of a cold snap. And yeah, it's full of life because as cold as it may be this morning, it's a lot warmer than Svalbard or Iceland. I like these frosty mornings. Frosty mornings make winter worthwhile for me. I like the constellations of the sort of the properly cold. I like the frost and the snow. I don't like the sort of 5 degrees tepid grey raining. That was last November, which felt numb.
The lack of daylight, the lack of sunlight.
Yeah, that can be a struggle. I moved here from Essex 2 years ago, and that was quite a sort of sharp juxtaposition. I don't know if it's necessarily coming north or just coming west. But it was certainly quite difficult to deal with the fact that some days it just doesn't get light.
Yeah.
Last week there was sort of darkness for 4 days and didn't see daylight. Faith's pointing.
Here
come the geese.
Here we go. I don't know, I can hear them, but I can't see them yet.
So they're just coming right. You won't see them from
the bush, but... Oh, yeah, see them. See them now, okay.
It's a big swirling stream of them.
Yeah, still quite low at the moment, though.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll head this way. still plenty out there sat down on the mud. If it's a dreich morning, then they'll stay in bed later. Yeah, it's up to them. Sometimes it just takes one to start and the rest will come. Sometimes they'll all sort of go off in their own separate schemes. That's, I suppose, one of the great things about nature, is that it does what it wants, not what you want. There's no timetable, no schedule. And no guarantee either that they're going to fly over our heads in a nice way. They could all fly off to Southerness and...
Really?
Sorry. Dragged you down for Aberdeen to look at some geese flying away.
A few birds in the air now.
Yeah, I'm playing right. Yeah. Is it just me, or do you sort of feel a sense of mounting excitement?
I would say excitement, anticipation.
Yeah.
Coupled with a wonderful sense of calm.
Yeah.
This massive, massive flat area in front of us, you can see for literally miles. And a sunrise is just so impressive.
Yeah, it's just the sort of fabulous thing that, you know, everyone should be doing if they can. Geese are getting louder. The willy hat has come off to help me hear it.
So did they just work themselves up into a frenzy and then off we go?
Yep. That's the theory anyway. But there is nothing as stubborn and self-willed as a goose. Which did occur to me while I was doing the field work for wintering, that I was literally embarking on a wild goose chase. Yep, there's a small skein heading off right now. In fact, are they going to come directly over us? They're not. They're going to go over the hide, I'm sure.
Look as if they're going to land.
Turn around, come back.
You seeing more?
Yeah, that's a huge flock up over there, 7,000.
Yeah.
Is that actually, the more you go, the more you scan left, the more geese you see. That is a huge old flock that's getting up over there.
Yeah.
Where are we going? They're turning. I can't tell if they're turning inland or away. Keep going off right, off into the grazing marsh behind us, and the rest are all swirling in front of us again.
Yeah. I have to say, this is an absolutely brilliant way to start a day.
Yes, yeah.
You know, you start off in the dark, and there's three heading straight for us now.
Yeah. They look like they're going to land right in front of us.
Yeah. Remember you used to get the three china ducks on folks' walls? No. That's what it looked like there. Just those three geese just in front of the sunrise. Beautiful.
All of them coming at us now.
All right, okay.
Just think about your experience in London, and you know, obviously people like living in the cities, but you're out here looking at that beautiful sky, and why would you want to live in a city?
No, I don't get it. I could never do it again. My last Dumfries goose was on the 10th of April, a small skein of 10 pink feet, low in the mid-afternoon. I was in the park, in my shirt sleeves. I could have been wearing shorts, and the sky was a stunning blue. The skein turned northeast over town. I go online later and see an observer on the Isle of Skye has noticed big flocks moving north throughout the day, not an exodus, but a return, as they follow the fleeing winter. And it is unusual, low enough, late enough, and loud enough to be obvious, to stand out. I nod my head at them, wish them the best, and hope to see them in the last week of the next September, with their new young in the scheme, wintering again.
Wonderful, evocative sound of the geese there at Kalaverick Wetland Centre, near Dumfries. Many thanks to Stephen Rutt for being our guide and those excellent readings from his books, Seafaring and Wintering. It was just a great experience.
It was fantastic. As usual, we're moaning and grumping, you're standing outside the hotel car park at 5 o'clock in the morning. But once you get out, the sun's coming up and so many geese, so many swans, just magical.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.